Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Pictures podcast. And guess who's here this week? Our old friend from the Talking Pictures TV show, Karen James.
Hi,
Karen.
Me. Hello. Good to be here.
It's good to have you.
We'll change that.
Bill McCuddy's here as always.
Yes.
As is Bill Brigoli.
That's right.
And what are we talking about this week? We're going to talk about this movie, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, with Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson, and somebody else big is in that movie.
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell steals the movie.
And we're going to talk about a documentary about Rose Marie. You know, there's a lot more from the Dick Van Dyke Show, Rose Marie. You would figure, why would somebody make a documentary about Rose Marie? Well, we're going to tell you why.
I had one name before Cher. Yeah. I had one name before Bono.
That's before Madonna.
Two names, technically, but
yeah,
okay.
This woman's got quite an interesting
story. And Marie could
story.
Be a last name. I mean, it's not
We're going to talk about Murder on the Orient Express, the remake of the Agatha Christie novel, and Bill Brigoli spoke to who are we going to hear from?
Johnny Depp and Kenneth Branagh
Johnny Depp and Kenneth Branagh, we got on the show.
And by the way, that rumbling you feel is Sidney Lumet rolling in his grave.
There you go. And we're going to talk about a movie called The Florida Project from the same director as Tangerine. That was the movie that was shot on iPhones.
Upgrade. This is the iPhone 10 he shot it on.
Oh, okay. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, like this Rolling Stone documentary that's
on HBO.
That's on HBO.
Docu-series, actually.
And we'll talk about that. But let's start out talking about Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Let's see. I guess I'll front this one since everybody else will be fronting other ones. This is about a woman whose daughter was murdered, and she feels that the local law enforcement sort of closed the case and is not doing everything in their power to find out who the murderer was. And I guess this murder took place, a year prior or 2 years? About a year prior. So she takes all this money and she buys these three billboards that are prominent.
Where are they?
Well, they're near her house.
They're outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Right. They're not like...
Thanks for playing along.
They're not on the main highway that has the most traffic. It's sort of near her house. But they kind of blast the sheriff, saying that he's not doing enough, and name him by name, played by Woody Harrelson. And he's, understandably,
chagrined.
Pissed off that... there are these three billboards that say,
outside Ebbing, Missouri.
That are saying that he's doing a lousy job. And Sam Rockwell is his deputy, and he's kind of a psycho, I would say, or sort of early on, he's kind of a psycho. And a lot of people have psychotic, crazy behavior in this, not just Frances McDormand.
Anything you recognize, Neil?
Not just Frances McDormand for buying these billboards, but certain actions that she takes, certain actions that Sam Rockwell takes. There's a guy that enters into the picture that comes into this store where she's working, and he's exhibiting crazy behavior, and the whole thing is...
You'll never look at your dentist the same way after
this. Yeah, the whole thing is... Yeah, well, that's in the trailer, actually. I'm not really giving anything away. She grabs a drill she's in the dentist and starts drilling into the thumbnail of the dentist, she's kind of nuts.
There, with the grace of God, goes all of us.
But there's a tongue-in-cheek aspect to this thing that it's not, what I'm describing sounds like this really riveting drama. And it's a drama slash satire. Would you agree with that?
Well, first of all, it's written and directed by Martin McDonagh, who did In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. And that's the kind of thing he does. He's known as a playwright, and he does this kind of dark comedy. So you're right. It sounds like it's this really intense murder, rape story. And it's really not that. She's out for justice. You don't have to sit through a violent crime. But it's about the bigotry and the absurdity and craziness in this small town.
It's so not Norma Rae, so not the normal female out for justice kind of movie that Hollywood normally makes. It's much, much cooler. And the way you were describing it, anyone listening would think, instead of a heavy drama, that it's like could be over the top. And it could have easily gone over the top with the wrong people and the wrong tonality. But this thing is spot on in black dead comedy, and I really enjoyed it.
I think it's really great.
I really enjoyed it too. I mean, it's Right. I can't call it a comedy, although there are just some dark, very darkly comedic elements
to
it.
Well, it's more absurd. You know, it's absurd. Rockwell turns out to be an enraged racist. There are explosions. There are things that go off the rails really easily, but in the black comedy way that Martin McDonagh does, embedded in this really serious drama. It's not as funny as In Bruges or Seven Psychopaths, I have to say that. It's more serious.
And there are serious.
Serious
sections, including Woody Harrelson and the arc of his character, yeah. as well as, he's a family guy, and there's something that happens which I won't tip off with him, and that's certainly not funny. But McDormand, who I think is, they say she's an odds-on favorite to win the Academy Award.
Well, and it's hard not to look at her and think about the Coen brothers. And I know with Suburbicon last week, we're like bringing the Coen brothers into almost every conversation in the last couple of months. But this really does have that kind of a feel also. And that's a compliment. I don't think, I think it's original on its own. But I think that you keep trying to find a category for it. It doesn't really fall into anything except, as you said, kind of a dark comedy. And it's got some serious moments in it. And yes, Frances McDormand is being talked about for an Oscar. Oscar nomination, but it's a tough year for women. There are going to be a lot of strong performances coming out of some things we haven't seen and some things we already have. So we'll see whether she makes it or not.
Tough in a good way. There's a lot of
They're great. It's Sophie's Choice this year, speaking of which. So Meryl Streep, who we just saw in a trailer for the new Spielberg movie, probably looks like an automatic this year again, too.
It's called The Post. And it used to be called The Papers.
Right. Spielberg's film about the Pentagon Papers, and whether the Washington Post decided whether they should publish it or not.
As Bill Regoli said, it has a serious film.
It screams serious Oscar contender all over it. These movies come out every year, and I look at I may look at the actual film and feel a whole different way.
The trailer looks like Spotlight meets All the President's Men.
Yeah.
But you say that like it's a bad thing.
No, it's not. It
could be in Spielberg's hands, but it doesn't look like he's being too whimsical.
No, I mean, it's Tom Hanks. I saw Bob Odenkirk in the trailer. Mm-hmm. I always love Bob Odenkirk. I mean, it's Meryl Streep, as you said. And it could be great.
She's Catherine Graham. He's Ben Bradley. They're all trying to decide what the right thing to do is. The New York Times actually gets sued for publishing parts of it, so that has everybody nervous backing off. And if the screenplay is to be believed, the whole fate of that newspaper, and this is when newspapers mattered more than they do these days, the whole fate of the Washington Post relied on this story and whether it was right or wrong and whether they were going to survive to print the next day. So, yeah, it does scream important movie. But it's also an important story that probably people didn't know about.
What you said is interesting about if Spielberg doesn't screw it up, because Spielberg sometimes doesn't screw it up and does great work, and then there's stuff where he does it and sometimes on serious subjects, not Schindler's List, where he didn't screw it up. That's a great, great film. But there are movies where the serious subject matter and he puts that kind of light Spielberg touch in there, and it's. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think this is going to be that kind of film. And no one's seen this yet, by the way. We're just talking about the trailer here. No one has seen this film.
For Oscar consideration, like December 22nd.
Right.
But it's still being cut, what I've heard.
January 17th is when it's actually hitting theaters. Right. So nobody's seen the thing.
And nobody quite knows, because this started out as a screenplay by a woman named Liz Hannah, and it was mostly about Catherine Graham. And then they brought in a second screenwriter, and it morphed a little bit. Bit more to be about the paper and the whole story overall. So I don't know how those two things fit together.
Were you a fan of Bridge of Spies? Because I was not.
Not so much. I wanted to like it more than I did.
Yeah.
I like the acting.
Lincoln. War Horse. Come on, this guy's got a lot to atone for.
And War Horse was a great play.
You always mentioned
brilliant.
That.
It was. And the problem with the movie to me, and as bizarre as this sounds, is what made the play so brilliant and so innovative and interesting was the fact that it was human puppets playing the horses, and it was all choreographed.
You like puppets, don't you, Neil?
They weren't like Muppet puppets. It was this artistic thing that was just brilliant. After a while, you forgot that did you see War Horse on stage?
No.
Okay. Well, you forgot the fact that they were puppets and the movements. It was actually like a dance. It was brilliant. And then you're using... You're using real horses in the film, the Spielberg's film War Horse, and it's not... I don't know. I'm not a big... I don't hate the movie War Horse, but I just felt that it... it lacked the
So what we're really saying is when Spielberg, or I think what we're really saying is when he gets out of his own way, he can make a great movie. And if he's done that on The Post and lets the story be compelling and nail-biting and cool and doesn't have too many Josh Gad-like people running around, and he's not in the film, but I mean, no comic relief that will go, oh no, running around the newsroom, then I think, and the only humor is gallows humor about the fate of this thing, then I think, and Nixon and blah, 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 then I think we got a good movie.
But when has he done that in a serious film? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, he tends to put a Disney-esque almost wand over certain aspects
of certain films.
Well, you're going to hold me to this.
No, I can't think of one. That's why I'm asking. You're probably right.
I'm sure I am, but let me think of something.
Well, Lincoln has certain elements of that to an extent. I mean, it's like a Frank Capra-esque kind of ending.
Yeah, that, I don't mean laugh-out-loud stuff. Right. No, I do mean sort of this...
Well, I thought you meant comic relief.
No, I meant that with Josh Gad running around the newsroom. Like, somebody like that would be annoying. And Odenkirk is a funny guy, but I'm sure he's not funny in this film.
Right.
We'll see.
I agree with what you're saying. I do. Can we mark this in history? No, I hear what you're saying. Well, we'll see. But anyway, moving on, Bill Bregoli spoke to and saw Murder on the Orient Express. So how does this compare to the Agatha Christie thing? How does this compare to the 1974?
I don't know. Sidney Lumet.
I don't know. I don't remember 1974.
Yeah, but I can tell you, I think it's line for line. I mean, I think it basically is like the Psycho redo that Gus Van Sant did. I think this is pretty close to the original.
One had this big all-star cast.
Yeah, Sean Connery.
Right, and it was the Agatha Christie thing, and this is like, okay, so it's...
Was Albert Finney was
Albert Finney. Yeah. Peter Ustinov has also played him.
Right. Mia Farrow, like, I think, was in it. Or I'm getting that confused with Death on the Nile. I mean, those all run together for me.
Well, you know what I get confused with? There's a Neil Stein.
Almost anything, isn't it?
Murder by Death, which is a... I think it was called Murder by Death. It was sort of a parody.
Yeah, Peter Falk. But that's in a mansion. That's not on a train.
Yeah, but I think he was
trying... It's the same idea, yeah. It's trying to be that
I think
that
he was
sort of
trying
thing.
To do, this Agatha Christie.
But this one has Johnny Depp out
of
costume.
Johnny Depp. And everybody I've talked to has said, he's not in it for long, is he? And he's not. His character is killed off, and I'm not spoiling anything, because everybody knows his character gets killed off, and that's the murder on the Orient Express that Hercule Poirot is called upon to solve. And everybody, it turns out, has a motive, which what makes it fun. And he goes back and forth from person to person, questioning them on the train. And a little bit of action happens. There's some chases. There's some shooting, that sort of thing, which is difficult to do when your set is just a train.
But listen to this cast on the 74 version. I mean, you got Albert Finney, as we said. You got Lauren Bacall, Ingrid Bergman, as you said, Bill, Sean Connery, Martin Balsam, Jacqueline Bisset. I mean, this is Anthony Perkins,
sort of
Vanessa
kind of done
Red
the same
Gray.
Thing here.
This
I mean, obviously, this has got some big
Judy
names
Dench
in it as well.
Out.
Yeah. Look, I don't. This is to me. Am I the only one that feels this way? This to me is like remaking The Sixth Sense. I mean, you so know the ending before it even starts that I don't think it makes any sense to remake it.
I don't. Well, I actually don't remember the ending because I saw it 40.
I remember as a kid being
43 years.
I remember
ago.
As a kid thinking that was the coolest twist ending, you know. But I was like 12. I mean, I just thought it was like.
Plus, you know, you gotta assume that most people, under.
So
the
I'm
age,
wrong. So most people really won't
under
know
the
going
age
in.
Of 50, 45 are not going to know the original movie unless they...
Right,
really
but that's
matter.
Not the audience,
the
is it?
The idea is just to go on the ride.
What's
is
the
this
audience?
One literally about the ride?
What's well, the audience?
Well, I don't know, but I don't think it's a young audience. So basically, if you're young enough not to know what the ending is, you're young enough not to want to see it.
Film. Yeah. A lot of people are talking about it as kind of like eye candy for old people. Like it's sort of, it's
well,
not,
star,
it's
got,
not Thor.
Daisy,
it's not
Daisy Ridley.
Daisy Ridley.
She's supposed to be a complete snooze.
She's very good in it.
Really? I read that she was just a complete non-event.
I thought she was kind of, well, because she was the youngest one. I think she stood out. The rest of them
are. Your predilections are well known on this podcast.
I actually do recommend it. I got to give a caveat. I did fall asleep a couple times, but I worked an overnight shift. It's kind of talky, but if you like that.
Hey, Mrs. McCuddy wants to go.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, I think that's the, I think that, as we said earlier, the 50 plus, like it's for old people. It's for kind of, it's like nostalgic.
The one bit of weirdness that happened during the screening was that they, publicist that we all know, Susie, went up in front and talked and said, "We're showing it to you in 70 millimeter.
Oh.
You're so lucky." And they started, and I'm watching it now. Mind you, I work in sound and radio. I'm kind of tuned to this sort of thing, but I realized that the picture and the sound were out of sync for a good three quarters of the movie. Then it went quiet for very briefly. The sound got shut off. We all went, And then it was, then the sync was restored.
Wow.
So the Fox actually offered to show it to everyone again if you wanted
to. And they were like, no, that's okay.
No, that's fine. But it was,
that's funny, isn't it, Neil?
Perot is knocking on the doors to question people. He's knocking on their cabinet.
Oh, and it's like, knock.
It's like, hit, knock, knock.
Karen,
so that took me out of it a little bit.
Maybe it's better that way.
Karen suggested that we all take a look at a series, which I did, and Bill's apparently got addicted to it, called Alias Grace.
Alias Grace.
Which is running on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah.
So tell us about that, and then we'll chime in with our opinions.
I saw the first one.
Great. Yeah. So we
it's
could all
based
talk about
on
it.
A Margaret Atwood novel set in the 19th century, based on a real-life murder. And Sarah Geddon plays this housemaid. And another housemaid who's having an affair with the master is murdered. And when we begin the series, she's in prison. Her name is Grace. And it's a kind of cat and mouse game between her and everyone around her, including the psychiatrist who's trying to find out whether she really had anything to do. Yes, the American psychiatrist, played by a Canadian actor, though. Yeah.
Bastards. They always come and get our jobs.
Because it was shot in Canada.
Dan Aykroyd.
Co-production with CBC. It's really about her manipulating people around her, and we don't really know how much she did or didn't have to do with this murder. So that's sort of the mystery.
We still don't.
Of it. We still don't. But it's written by Sarah Polley, whom we know as an actress and a director who did
Go.
As we
she
tell.
Was in the movie Go. She's been in, right.
Directed by Mary Harron, who did American Psycho and I Shot Andy Warhol. And it's just really sharp. It's not as hot button topical as The Handmaid's Tale. It's based on a really different kind of Margaret Atwood novel. But I think it's really addictive. Did you think?
I was completely addicted. I watched it in one evening with my wife.
You watched all
Yeah. Now, have you
episodes?
Seen all of them?
No, I saw
okay,
the first.
Okay, and you've seen the first one.
I saw the first one.
Okay, I'm
going
to give you a spoiler, but I'm not going to give anything away, if that'll make sense when I say it. It's easily the best first 5 hours I've seen on television all year long, and then it completely lost me in the last hour.
Really?
Because it doesn't really ever define whether or not, through a series of strange
well,
kind
I
of
think they want to
flashbacks
bring
and,
season
well,
two.
Yeah, there might be
a couple of POV problems for me that you're not really certain what she did or didn't know. What she did or didn't do, and that was a real, real problem for me.
But that
and
was
then
deliberate.
There's a,
that didn't bother me.
There's a reveal also in the sixth hour, which I won't give away, about what may in fact have been responsible for all this. That I think is just a cheat, and I was really disappointed in it from that standpoint. And I'm telling you, we started it at 5:30, we were done at midnight,
wow.
And we every hour we just kept going. We got to do one more. We got to do
yeah,
one
you
more.
You tweeted
we
about
more.
The fact that you
yeah,
were
I was,
addicted
I,
to
but I was profoundly disappointed by the last hour, and for that reason, I can't recommend it.
Really?
I totally disagree. I think the ending, whatever you think of it.
Is it ending or is it like, will they do another season? Since
it's, will they do another season?
Right.
But I think it also. It
well, she's old and out of. I mean, I'm not giving anything away. She another season of what? Then what, on the farm?
Well, you know, there are flashbacks. You don't have
okay.
to. They're not dead.
Okay.
I'll
you're
give
right.
away that way. They're not all dead. Yeah, there's always a way to do another season
okay.
because we there's a lot of her history because this goes back and forth in time. So you meet her in the prison, but it goes back to her childhood, her abused childhood.
It takes place
19th
in eight,
century. Yeah.
Yeah, mid-1800, 1830.
No, they got cars, don't they?
No.
Doesn't somebody roll up in a
it's
car?
It's late 19th century.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So, So it's a history piece, but I've heard
if
it
you like Downton Abbey, it's kind of in
no,
the same.
No, no,
well, I mean, it's
I've,
in the same. It looks like it feels was, like it could have been shot like a mile away from Downton.
No, I was about to say people have called this the anti-Downton Abbey
okay,
because
well,
it's the dark side of the 19th century and sort of the downstairs.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
People and how they have absolutely no rights, no money, no anything.
No point of view
but,
in the sixth
but
episode.
But she's got a brain and she can manipulate people, so it's pretty.
Yeah, that is cool. And the whole, I mean, it's basically, you know, The Sopranos when he went to talk to the psychiatrist, like that was the coolest in some episodes, the coolest part, Tony talking to Melfi.
Yeah.
So, like, that's basically the spine of this thing. She sits down. She's in prison, but she gets to talk to this. What is he exactly? He's a psychologist, psychiatrist?
I don't think that term had been developed at the time that this thing came out.
Right. He was one of the first psychiatrists.
A studier of human behavior, yeah. He calls himself.
She's got a lot of leeway for somebody who killed somebody, allegedly, in terms of the prison. Yeah, you can go clean up the governor's house every day or whatever the warden's house.
Well, that's the way
house.
They use prisoners.
But anyway,
the maid.
That, yeah, well.
It, yeah, but then she flips out, and then she's banned from the house, and he gets her back in.
Yes, yes.
Well, that was early on.
It's really good for the first 5 hours. That's all I'm going to say.
Do you like it, Bill? For goalie.
I don't know if I'd watch anymore because the time frame was jumping back and forth a lot, which kind of annoys me in movies. I'm a more linear kind of guy, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you honestly, I was going to tune out after the first hour, and then Mrs. McCuddy said, no, this is great, let's keep going, and I was thrilled that she did that until the end.
All right. Why don't you talk about this movie, The Florida Project, which opened last week?
Yeah, this is cool. This is from Sean Baker, the guy who did Tangerine that we enjoyed a couple of years
back. Shot all on
the
guy.
Yeah, that was its unfortunate gimmick because it sort of hung over that film, I think. It was an interesting transgendery kind of cool slice of life that happened in an afternoon. Well, over the holidays in Los Angeles. This moves to Florida, Orlando, just outside of Disney World down there, right? Disney World. And it's about kind of a welfare motel on the sort of outskirts of Orlando that has seen much better days, but is obviously Disney themed. It's like a castle-y kind of thing run by Willem Dafoe, who has to go night by night and week by week to collect the rent from these people. And one of the inhabitants is a young woman who was discovered on Instagram, never acted before, Bria Villanelli, and she's exceptional as the kind of part-time prostitute, full-time mother to this unbelievable little 7-year-old who was discovered also like in an open casting call. And this guy, this Baker, walked through like Targets and like all kinds of department stores and cast people off the street, uses real people in the film. It's basically a slice of this kind of very seedy life and how the kids spend their days with nothing else to do except run around parking lots.
How old are the kids?
They're very young. Some are 4 and 5. The principal plays at 7. I don't know how old she was when she made it. There's like basically 3 young kids who are extremely strong. The whole movie feels completely improvised to me, and it has a kind of a bizarre, cool ending. But it's not everyone's cup of tea.
The ending is the worst part, I think. The ending really goes off the rails. It's so predictable. You're waiting for it the whole time. I am in the minority on this. I think it's good. It's really well directed. But I think it's a little self-congratulatory. Like, he's patting himself on the back for discovering these downtrodden people. I think that's a big problem with the film. Also,
but they're actors. They're not real.
They are real people that he's turned into actors. Most of them. Well, Willem Dafoe's really
the
only.
But the kid has acted before. She doesn't come from that background.
Right.
But I think it does have a kind of documentary feel to it. It's really well directed. But I think overall, first of all, it's way too long. And honestly, the first hour will give you a headache because it's a lot of kids running around screeching. You can get that in real life. You don't have to go to the movies to hear kids screeching.
So would you recommend the movie?
You know, as I said, I'm in the minority. It's getting great reviews. It may win awards. A lot of people love it.
What kind of awards is this going to win?
They're talking about Willem Dafoe for an Oscar. I don't see
that as a
supporting.
Supporting, he could get nominated. I mean, the acting is really good, but I think critics groups are going to love it. I don't know beyond that, but I think it's
an Indie Spirit Award winner, absolutely.
How's Willem Dafoe in Murder on the Orient Express, by the way?
Is he in that?
Yeah, he's in it. He has an interesting character. His character is not what he seems at the beginning of the movie, which is he plays really well. He plays a guy who can do several accents, let's put it that way. He's fine, but it's an ensemble movie. Everybody's in it a little bit at a time. Actually, I have a soundbite, too, while we're at it. Let me throw in the soundbite from Kenneth Branagh saying that it has all the elements that a film like this needs.
A tangle of strangers, as the screenplay would have it, produces the possibility of dramatic conflict, humor, and tension. But here you have snow and bad weather. You have elegance and an age of romance in travel, and you have murder.
They also have Johnny Depp, and Johnny Depp said pretty much the same thing, that there are a lot of elements that Kenneth Branagh put into the movie.
It's time travel on one hand. I mean, you're back in this other era when things were very, very different, and you've got stellar performances from some of the greatest actors who've ever lived. There's never an opportunity for a boring moment.
That's eye candy for old people. I'm telling you, everything he says makes me think we're going to be there Saturday night, early show. We don't want to be up too late.
How do you think this will do, Murder on the Orient Express, at the box?
Depends if you get the old people out to the movies. What else is happening this week on TV that's going to keep them at home? I don't know.
But this
Jeopardy.
Is definitely an old person's movie.
Wheel of Fortune. Now.
Nothing explodes.
You're not getting millennials coming in to see Daisy
Ridley. I can't imagine they would. No, she's not driving this movie. She's got a little part in it. I don't think.
She's not the engineer.
Everybody has a little part.
Yeah.
And probably the one who chooses the scenery the best, does the best with her part, is Judi Dench.
And has Kenneth Branagh. Is he over the top?
Well, he obviously directed himself. Because he gives
the
himself,
ham leading the ham.
He gives himself really nice close-ups, and he's got a mustache that you have to see. Believe
it's ridiculous. It's like
I understand how people would go. It'd be nice, Maude, to go to the movies tonight, wouldn't it? And they might older people Maude. Might go. This I'm saying like
coming guy, with an older person's name,
talking to his wife. However. Then, The Maude in my household, my wife, who does want to see it, would be the brains of the outfit, and she would go, well, if it all takes place inside a train, we can wait for it to come on the small screen. So I don't know how well it is going to do, is my answer to that.
See.
All right. So here's my tip of the week, and three of us saw it. It's a documentary, and it's called Wait for Your Laugh.
And wait for the laugh.
Wait. I think it's Wait for Your Laugh.
Okay.
Wait for Your Laugh.
All right.
And it's a documentary about Rose Marie. Now, Rose Marie, for those of you...
No, it's a musical. No, okay, it is a documentary.
Now, for those of you who ever watched the Dick Van Dyke Show with Mary Tyler Moore, but Rose Marie and Maury Amsterdam, written, directed, written and created by Carl Reiner, Rose Marie was one of the writers. She played Sally Rogers, and she was one of the writers in the writers' room. And, that's all I really knew about Rose Marie, and, except for some appearances on the Hollywood Squares, which ran after the run, the early 70s, late 60s. And I'm going, why is anybody making a documentary about Rose Marie? Well, man, was I wrong. This is a fascinating story. She's still alive. She's 95.
Well, as we're taping this.
Yeah. She's been in the business for 90 years. She was a superstar at 5 years old. She was baby Rose Marie. And she would be, this is pre-Shirley Temple, and she was playing nightclubs and headlining the vaudeville circuit.
They had to change the laws in Chicago because of it, because her dad went to prison, got fined every time she went on stage, and then he would go and then bring her back, and it was pretty cool. I mean, there are some cool stories in it.
Right. Her father was connected to the mob. He was a hitman from the mob. She says that his big technique was shoving an ice pick through somebody's eye or head or something like that.
So it's a good childhood, is what
right.
you're saying.
But she was friends with and mentored by Al Capone, amongst other mobsters.
Uncle Al.
Mentored to do what? Put ice picks through people's
eyes? Mentored to the wrong. Show business. Yeah, protected her. I got your career from now. He would
patron of hers. He was
need anything, if anybody's bothering you, let me know. He was
that's pretty interesting.
Comes in handy later in her life, too.
The right word either, but
he's her. We're all stancing around, not patron, not like the guy who sort of makes things happen for her.
He was like
doesn't teach her anything like a
Johnny
mentor.
Fontaine to Don Corleone right. in The Godfather. It was Rose Marie to Al Capone.
Got it.
In real life, and she was mob connected when they opened up, which we know the movie Bugsy, when Bugsy Siegel opened up the first luxury resort hotel, the Flamingo,
Las Vegas,
Nevada. She was there on opening night. And she talks about that, and she talks about...
some of those wide shots of the first three casinos and just nothing but desert around them are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of cool stuff in this film. Yeah. Even if you don't give a shit about Rosemarie.
No, it's really the history of American show business from about...
Lived by one woman.
Right, from about early 1920s, before radio was even around, through radio. She had a radio career. She had a stage career.
Whatever medium they invented, right. they she plugged herself
she had,
into.
She had a radio career. She had a television career.
She had a Broadway career. She had was going to have a movie career, but the Broadway show that she got in with Phil Silvers, that she was playing the same role in
Top Banana.
She got. We won't tell why because it's a nice surprise. But she got screwed over in that thing, and so that kind of made her bitter about motion pictures.
And she had a husband that she really cherished.
Yeah, she had a husband that she who was a horn player, played with not Tommy Dorsey, but what was the other big band?
Glenn Miller?
He played with a lot of...
He was a very talented trumpet player,
right.
And that's a very interesting story. But when we get to the Dick Van Dyke stuff, the movie's narrated by Peter Marshall, actually, who hosted the Hollywood Squares. When we get to the Dick Van Dyke stuff, there's great color footage. If you're a fan of that show, was shot in black and white for the five seasons. I believe it was five seasons that it was on the air. There's great home movie color footage of them doing that show. And she talks, I just thought that was her whole life, was really basically, that was her pinnacle, was the Dick Van Dyke show. It's just one of, 30 things that she did. But the Dick Van Dyke stuff is interesting. She talks about how when she got the part, and if you watch the credits of that show, it says the Dick Van Dyke Show starring Rosemarie and Maureen. She gets second billing after Dick Van Dyke, Mary Tyler Moore's last, and how she was kind of jealous about the fact that Mary Tyler Moore, who Carl Reiner discovered had comedic talents, became,
the focus of the show.
Yeah, more of a focus. Yeah. And
well, that's how it was pitched to her. The same way, wasn't it Sherwood Schwartz pitched Tina Louise that Gilligan's Island was going to be all about her? And then she got there. You know that story?
No.
Oh, that's a famous story. She was pissed. She showed up and she goes, "Who's this Gilligan guy?" And like, what's it? And she thought she was the star.
Hollywood actress gets stranded on an island.
Yeah.
You're it, baby.
So Rosemarie was pitched this show with Dick Van Dyke and Maury Amsterdam, and she picked Maury Amsterdam, who was a great comedian at the time, and like she says in the film, like a joke machine. Like they needed jokes, and he would just pound them out because they were joke writers for Alan Brady. She said it was pitched to her that was the whole show. The way, I don't know, Barney Miller is all in that one sort of precinct room.
She thought
it was all going to, and then all of a sudden they're shooting stuff at home, and there's Mary Tyler Moore, and all of a sudden all the magazine covers are about Mary Tyler Moore,
right.
And she was chagrined, and Carl Reiner asked to sit her down and go, "Look, if you're pissed off, you got to leave." And she
Carl Reiner's like, "It's about my life, and my family was more important than my career, so there's more emphasis on the family, but I'd love to
have..." That wasn't the way he pitched it to her, you can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell Carl Reiner is backpedaling.
Now, I love the movie, and then, by the way, before we get, I ask Bill about this, right after that, she has this nightclub act where she goes on the road with Rosemary Clooney and who were the other two women?
I don't know. They're all old and they didn't get along.
Four older women that didn't get along at
four
all.
Four girls, four or something?
I think that was it.
That had massive egos and I don't know. That's interesting.
She liked Rosemary Clooney. She didn't like one of the other ones. I can't remember the four names. I'm sorry, ladies.
Yeah, I know. But they were...
we remember you, Rosemary. You're the last woman standing.
The one problem I had with it was... this is a problem I have with a lot of documentaries, is the recreated footage where they hire actors.
Yeah, I don't like that either. That's a creative decision that documentary filmmakers make. Some do it. Errol Morris does it, and some don't. They just believe in the narrative of the story, and they find the footage they can find. And there is, I will say that it is kind of too bad in this film because there is a wealth of material. As you said earlier, the behind-the-scenes shooting of the show, and somehow they found pictures of her and a little bit of movie footage of her singing when she was Baby Rosemarie.
And she had this Ethel Merman booming voice at 5 years old where they go, nobody believed when they heard her on the radio that she was a five-year-old kid.
Yeah, people were riding in going,
she's 5 years old.
Show us that woman. Show us that older woman.
She's not sounding like Shirley Temple. Which was,
she could do Jimmy Durante. She was really, really a gifted kind of comedian.
Right.
And would have maybe been, the movie sort of suggests, another Lucille Ball if there hadn't been Lucille Ball. And if she'd had different opportunities than she had.
Well, I
so we talked you into seeing it?
The mob part sounds really interesting to me, but I have to tell you guys, the word vaudeville is like Ambien to me. It just makes me fall asleep.
Vaudeville constitutes a very small portion.
Okay, that makes me want to see it more.
Small.
Maybe I can fast forward by that part.
Was it vaudeville or was it burlesque that she came out of?
I think no, it's vaudeville.
It was vaudeville.
Burlesque, they're taking off their clothes and she
right.
makes
yeah,
a point.
She couldn't have gotten
everyone
on stage.
Everyone
on.
That would be a whole
lot
other story.
But it is, as I said, and I'm repeating myself, it's the history of American show.
We're used to that. Don't worry about it.
It's 90 years of American show business through every medium, through stage, through television, through radio, through nightclubs, you know, and like Bill said, whatever medium there was at the time, or even, you know, I mean, she's 95 now. I mean, I'm waiting to see her YouTube channel or
something. She wants to do, like, she wants to keep working. That's the only sad part of the movie. She actually sits like...
she said she dreams at night about how she can
Sunset
do her
Boulevard.
Act from her wheelchair.
She's like Norman Desmond looking at some of her old footage at one point in the movie, which I felt kind of sad about. But I don't think there's anything to feel sad about this woman for. She's had an unbelievably, like, chock-a-block life, and it's all here in the film. I mean,
there's
I started to say
John
you had
Carson.
To be...
She's been on Johnny Carson. There's early footage of Johnny Carson. Some tragedy befalls her, which I won't give away, but Carson brings her on the show to kind of make her feel better, to put her back in the spot.
She doesn't know that, though. She goes kicking and screaming onto the show, and then at the end he says, you feel better, don't you? And so, I mean, that's a nice way of Johnny getting what he wants, but coming out looking like a good guy. But anyway, she said nice things about him. And
so is this going
to
be in theaters? Where do you see this?
It is.
It opens this Friday.
It was actually in New York this past week. I think it's opening a little wider.
Why is a film like this opening this time of year, though? That makes no sense. It's going to get buried. There's so that's one of the reasons I haven't watched it. There's so much big stuff.
Get buried anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Well, at a different time of year, maybe you'd have more of a chance.
I think
of getting
maybe
out there,
Academy Award documentary consideration, perhaps.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Good luck.
It was
that.
Too late for our own Critics' Choice Documentary Awards, which happened last week and made Jane.
No, it would be considered.
That was Jane. I guess it would be considered.
Speaking
next year,
of
maybe.
The Critics' Choice Award Documentary Awards, which Bill and I attended last week.
Who was that announcer? He was so good.
It was Bill McCuddy, I believe. Wow.
Welcome Penn Jillette.
Yes. So Penn Jillette opens. We went to this documentary awards in Brooklyn.
Oh, don't tell this bad story about Penn.
Okay, fine. I won't tell it.
Well, no, now you have to that I said that.
Well, last year when we went, he opened the show with a card trick because, you know, he's Penn Jillette, Penn and Teller. He does magic tricks. And he blew the trick last year. And this year he says, we're going to open with a magic trick. And he kind of sort of blew the trick this year, too.
Not on purpose.
Talk about a steamroller, though. This guy just acts like nothing happens and keeps
this
moving.
This time he blew half
and
the
you're
trick.
Like, oh, was he only supposed to get half of the trick right?
Exactly.
And you're just staring there. And then, like all magic tricks, you're waiting for him to go out to somebody else and pull the right card out of somebody's ass or something. And that just didn't happen. He went to the first category and the show was off.
And he even got applause. He blew the trick and he got applause.
Yeah, I think it's become a tradition now, as I said to the Joey Berlin.
I came away from that documentary awards thinking about there's two documentaries that I want to see. One was this cat documentary.
Keddie.
That got like a zillion nominations and won one. All about cats and how cats are more intelligent than people, and they're
in Turkey. I think it's
and they're
where
controlling
it takes place.
Humans when you have a cat pet as opposed to a dog.
It's not quite that, but it's good.
Okay, so that made me interested because it got so many nominations. And then there was a documentary that did not win anything, but I thought it was very interesting. It was about JonBenet Ramsey.
That's great. Have you seen that?
I have seen it. I didn't know quite what it was about.
They're casting a movie.
Yeah.
A dramatic movie about...
Netflix. We've all seen it.
Yeah.
Right, and
yeah.
It's about the casting of this movie. Right. It looks like Waiting for Guffman, about all these women coming in going like, yeah, I could be crazy. People say I'm crazy. I could be that mother, you know? And all these little kids that are auditioning
not,
for the part.
It's not really about JonBenet. It's really about...
It's like Waiting for Guffman. It's about these people.
What you don't know, because you haven't seen it, is it's in the same... Is it Grand Junction, Colorado? It's in the same town that it happened in. So people are informing their auditions with hearsay, and they're starting to talk about who they really think did it and why. And that's what's really interesting to me. It's as though you went to the town where, well, you can't go to Hiroshima, but if you went to a town where something horrific had happened and you asked the local theater company to do a stage production of it, this is what happens. It's really, really bizarrely done. It's by a Swedish, I think, woman.
I don't remember who did it. It came out a while ago. I'm surprised it's eligible this year. But it makes
we have very
really
lax standards, I believe.
I would have liked it better if it were Waiting for Guffman, because you have the feeling that they're sort of unintentionally making fun of these people, or intentionally, but there's
that was
a kind
the
of
knock
nasty,
on it.
A kind of nasty undertone. I saw it probably a year ago.
Did you like it?
No.
No, because you thought it was too nasty. It was too demeaning.
I thought I didn't quite know what it wanted to do. Okay. I thought the tone was all over the place.
I only saw a clip of it at this documentary awards. The clip looked good, but again, you can't judge a book by its cover, and you can't judge a movie by its trailer.
Watch it. We'll see what you think next week.
Okay. So Bill McCuddy saw this documentary series that's about Rolling Stone.
Oh, yeah. And, I forgot we were going to talk about that.
Jan Wenner.
Yeah. The HBO and is it Alex Gibney? Alex is one of the one of two filmmakers that got the assignment to dive into the archives and with Rolling Stone's
permission. Very timely, considering that he's selling the magazine now.
Probably very timely for that reason, because this very much puts Rolling Stone at front and center for Watergate, for the it's how it morphed from music into politics. And it really is an excuse to see all of these great performers. And they're reading from the pages of Rolling Stone at the time, which we forget had PJ O'Rourke. It had Hunter Thompson. Hunter Thompson's all over the movie. Bill Clinton's in it. And it's a docuseries. It's at least two segments. It may be three. So it's 4 or 6 hours long. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. One of the takeaways is that Jan Wenner apparently had a camera crew following him from the beginning of being the editor, because they keep cutting back to all this footage of him then and now. And it's a little indulgent on that. Sorry, Juan. But otherwise, I can recommend this. It's pretty fascinating.
How many parts is it?
It's either two or three. I'm not sure, because I just watched the second one and it's up to the 80s. So I assume there's a third one.
Well, Jan Wenner also—he's the one who I think created the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know if the documentary touches.
We're not there yet. If that happens
upon that
in the 80s, I'll get to it.
I remember my friend, the late Don Kirshner, who is actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But he got in posthumously after he. Well, that's what it means, after he died. But it was all controlled by Jan Wenner. I remember that it was like there was a board there, but it was basically Jan's decision on who gets
in.
Of
another group like that, but I'm not going to mention names.
Yeah.
The great Annie Leibovitz is all over this thing too, because they show they keep cutting back to Jan and Anne walking through a photo gallery of all these old pictures from the magazine, and it's Spike's stories or Spark's stories that are good. I recommend it. It's on HBO on demand,
the Rolling Stone story is probably a very. I'd like to see it. It's a very interesting story. I mean, it started out as this just black and white newspaper. You know what I mean?
San Francisco.
And it was just like a fold over, and then it became this glossy, heavy stock cover, and then it became Rolling Stone.
Cameron Crowe writes for it. He's in the doc. Obviously, that's what Almost Famous is based on. You meet Ben Fong, the guy that's the editor at the time. Ben Fong Torres. It's cool.
What's going to happen to print? I mean, you used to write for the New York Times, and you've written for so many people, and you're such a good writer. And now
it's all up to you. What's going to happen?
No, but I'd like your take on this, just in the sense that, when there was only print and there were only magazines and newspapers, there was no internet. But, the internet has just decimated so many industries. I was just reading about how Macy's and Nordstrom's are suffering tremendously now, and malls are just suffering tremendously because of Amazon, and people are buying online, and so many papers are folding because of people are just getting their news, online, be it on Facebook, on Twitter, or just any news websites, So
I can't get Teen Vogue anymore.
Not in print.
How about Tiger Beat?
No.
Can you get Tiger Beat? I'm kidding. As a heralded award-winning print writer that you are.
Don't interrupt him. He has more of the question to go.
Okay. Go ahead, go.
If I knew the answer to that, I would be an economic genius. The whole problem is people don't know how to make things work online and make money. But I'm part of the problem. I never read anything in print anymore, and I haven't for years, even magazines. I read them online on my tablet. I read read everything online.
Sunday New York Times?
Absolutely.
But do you get that? Or
no,
you read that online?
No, I read the New York Times.
What about the coupons?
Online. Well, I guess I suffer. I don't get the coupons. I don't see the ads.
But I got to tell you, reading a regular paper online, like a weekday version of the paper, it's kind of okay, but the Sunday Times is such a massive thing. Don't you find it to be kind of like a pain in the ass to like read the Sunday Times online?
But it was in print, too. Then it clutters up your apartment.
Can't do the crossword.
It piles up. So you get the crossword online.
Yeah, it's not the same.
You get used to it. No, really. And I buy stuff online all the time. You know, I get everything from Amazon. I really don't have any problem with that.
Wow.
But I don't know what to say about the future.
Interesting. All right.
Well, that sucks. We wanted you to tell everything.
I'm saving it for my memoirs.
Karen, the
make it up, for the love of God. Something to tease.
Bill wanted to talk about I keep getting shit from Bill on Twitter about this movie Lady Bird, where I don't dislike the movie Lady Bird. I think it's okay. I just don't think it is, you know, the greatest movie of the year, but I think it's okay.
Well, it's in my top 10, and I don't think it's Oscar worthy on some levels, but it is being elevated in the conversation on the Gold Derby front and those Oscar pundits, that because there have been so many films made by women this year that have disappointed, like Detroit, that this is going to be anointed as I called it at a luncheon today, a career achievement movie for Greta Gerwig, who is way too young to have a career achievement award. But she's got great momentum behind her. Hollywood likes her, and she's very wisely going from festival to festival. She's talking to the voters, and I think this has a chance to get a couple of Oscar nominations.
I think so, too, especially for screenplay. Also for Laurie Metcalf for Supporting Actress.
I think Laurie Metcalf is an odds-on favorite to win Best Supporting Actress, and she's very good in the film. I think Saoirse Ronan, who I love, has a good shot at getting a nomination. I don't think she'll win. This is very early on, but I think she has a good shot at that. I think there's a good shot for the movie to get a Best Original Screenplay nomination.
Yeah.
I think director is a
I think long it's possible.
Shot.
I think
Picture's
it's possible.
A long
this
shot.
Is a really well-directed movie. I think
what
it's...
What was your take on that movie?
Yeah, no, I agree with all of you. I had a good time. I was recommending it to a friend. I was at a bar with a woman last night.
How'd that go?
For that went very well.
Tell us after this.
She likes coming-of-age movies, so I was recommending this to her.
You had me. Okay, so
that's it.
I think it sneaks in as a 10. I haven't seen them all, so I think it's one of the 10 movies that gets nominated, and then I think it's a slam dunk that the consolation prize she gets is screenplay. That, to me, makes so much sense as they're looking at their ballot.
That makes sense to me, too. But I also think she could get into director, because she doesn't put a foot wrong in this film. It really is scene for scene just brilliantly put together, and it's about class. It's not just about coming of age. It's about a lot of stuff that coming of age movies aren't usually. And I really
about lying to other people to get friends, and then they show up at what they think is your house,
exactly.
And it's like that's
or
a great
being embarrassed
scene.
About your parents or things like that. It really touches on a lot of things, and it's witty. And I think she's got a real voice as a
Tracy Letts as the dad is very underplayed, and but he's so many dads in the country right now who are like looking for work and. Not, you know, it's just really well done.
Just leave that alone.
It's just, you're going to get work, Neil. Don't worry.
Yes, this is my work. This is my job. We're still working on Talking Pictures. Hope to have news soon. So next week, we've got Justice League. We've got a movie called Wonder with Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson. We've got...
Well, wait a minute. You called that. You haven't been seeing the trailer for that? Like, it's Mask with Julia Roberts, and Jacob Tremblay is the little boy from Room that is disfigured, yes. And everybody at school is making fun of him, and this looks just dreadful and
right,
deadly.
Well, that opens next week.
So look forward to that.
We've got the new Denzel Washington movie, Roman J. Israel, Esquire. And
they screened that yesterday.
What's that?
They screened that yesterday.
Yes, they're also screening it Friday.
Okay.
And we've got the new Louis C.K. film, which I saw... Which is with, he wrote and directed it and stars in it, and it's with Chloe Grace Moretz, and it's with Edie Falco, and it's with longtime Louis C.K. favorite Pamela Adlon, and it also has John Malkovich in it, and he plays a...
wildly politically incorrect guy, right?
He plays a dad who's a famous movie producer, whose daughter, who's Chloe Grace Moretz, starts having an affair with a guy that's in his 70s, played by
John Malkovich.
And we'll talk about that next week.
So it's the Harvey Weinstein story.
So I don't want to say anything about it until next week, but we'll talk about it next week. Have you seen that yet?
I have not.
You have not. Has anyone? Well, hopefully you could all see it, because I have a lot to say about that one. And it's in black and white, by the way. I know Bill has seen it.
Must be serious. Then.
Bill has seen it, but he will save his opinion until next week. Karen, it was such a pleasure to have you on
the
podcast.
It's fun to be here.
We can follow you on Twitter at
Karen James.
At Karen James. At Karen James.
That's right.
C-A, spell it, because people are idiots.
C-A-R-Y-N James,
there
as in
go.
James.
As in James, you were on, oh, we were always friends. James, the Billy Joel song.
This is proof we never edit this show. Okay, and I'm Bill McCuddy. I watch the bad stuff, so you don't have to.
And listen to Neil sing.
Karen James at Karen James, and Bill McCuddy at Bill
McCuddy. Bill McCuddy.
Bill McCuddy. Bill Brigoli does not have a Twitter account, but you can follow
him. He's the smart one.
You can follow him around the streets of New York if you could find him. And
go to Astoria. Just ask for me.
And I'm at Neil Rose and Apples. So for Karen James, thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Bill McCuddy.
Thank you very
and
much.
Bill Brigoli.
Yeah.
Bill, what do we do every week on this show?
I said it already, and of course you didn't hear it. So everyone's going to enjoy that. By the way, watch the Rosemarie documentary for the reason she wears a black bow in her hair. Such a nice
I love that. That's my pick of the week, is that Rosemarie documentary. I'm telling you something. Although, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, we all agree is...
Yeah, well, that's the movie that's going to get
really
talked about at the Oscars and blah, blah, blah.
Before we go, talking about Oscars, I think that's going to get a lot of Oscar nominations, you know? I think I guarantee you it's going to get some Oscar nomination.
Screenplay too, I think. Screenplay.
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
It's finally his time. He won't win, but he'll be nominated.
Yeah, I agree. And for Neil Rosen, thank you for that's me sitting around talking movies with us today, and we will sit around talking movies again with you next week.
The doctor says it's time for your medicine.